Welcome to the Launch Hour with Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry.
And we are broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm actually Bill McHenry, and Ron Reardon is off today. He's on a trip to California. On launch, we focus on launching of a business, the planning process, the planning that precedes the launch itself, the missteps and the successes of a launch, so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Henry Wishusen of Integrated Development Company. But before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for your success. Well, Henry, it's great to have you on the show today. How are you?
Well, Bill, I am just fantastic, and I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
Well, of course, Henry, and I want to let our listeners know about a little bit about your background. You've started your company, Integrated Development, about 5 years ago, and also have 30 years of innovation experience in both packaging and product development. And I'm really anxious today, Henry, to talk to you a little bit about the new products that you're about to launch into the marketplace.
I did start my business about 5 years ago, and like I sometimes say, it's generally best to start where you are. So I've done a lot of package development in that time, things that I knew very well. But now I've started to move into other areas as I've gained other knowledge and experience. And the products I'm working on now are my first retail products.
Can you tell our listeners about them, Henry?
Well, I have, along the line over the last few years, I have been working actually with sustainable and earth-friendly concepts. Of course, it's a very popular topic today, and from my perspective, it's not going away, and appropriately so. So I have been working with very thin wood veneers, and I've had some interest in woodworking all my life, so now I'm incorporating this material wood, which is not a traditional packaging material, in combining that with a lot of knowledge I have in processing, in creating products out of thin wood veneers that are not only sustainable, but reduce the amount of material used, so they're earth friendly and they're absolutely beautiful products. I have both some jewelry items and some office accessory products that I'm now just completing and putting in the market.
That's fantastic, Henry. Are you working with other entrepreneurs too, or are you working just on your products?
I work both on my products and with other entrepreneurs. Of course, I continue to work in the packaging business, and that is one of the things I recommend to anybody who's starting their own business is, you know, your greatest value is the knowledge and experience you've accumulated over the years. And so that helps pay the bills. As I continue to develop products, I don't have to rely so much on spending time generating income from my packaging knowledge.
Sure. You know, with the packaging and with the downturn, although it does seem like things are turning around, how did the economic downturn affect you?
Well, really very little. Because I work on the development side, every time there's a change, whether it be a social change, an economic change, there's new opportunity. There are new needs that are developed. So the economic downturn put me in a position to helping people reduce costs, find different ways and materials to for their packaging that would help them through the downturn. So I didn't see much of an effect.
Really? Well, that's really super. What kind of different packaging were you able to help your clients with during that time, during the last few years?
As I mentioned earlier, I have an interest in the sustainability side of packaging. I have one type of packaging that I enjoy focusing on is molded fiber. And now this is the kind of material you see in paper egg crates or fast food carryout trays. has a lot of potential. It's made from 100% recycled fiber, old newspapers and corrugated containers, and it has a great deal of potential, but it's somewhat challenging to engineer with. And because of my depth of knowledge, I can usually help customers work through those challenges and come up with some superb packaging.
That's great. I know a lot of major retailers are really into the sustainability, and I'm part of the housewares organization, and we have conferences once every quarter, and that's all we talk about is the sustainability. It's really, really important.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there about that and misunderstanding. And so I help my clients work their way through those issues as well.
How do you help them, Henry? Can you give our listeners some tidbits?
In the world of kind of environmentally friendly packaging, there are four R's they talk about: reuse, reduce, recycle, and there's about 10 different versions for the fourth R. Repurpose is one of them. So the first thing I help my customers with is to reduce the amount of material in the package and still get the performance that they need. Packaging has to perform. That's number one. And some I've seen packaging that they have put so much effort into becoming environmentally friendly that they've lost the purpose of the package, the protection. So the first thing is to reduce. The second thing to focus on is the material. Can it be recycled? Is it biodegradable or compostable? And what do those words really mean? And then, of course, once a customer goes down this path to become more environmentally conscious with their packaging, they want to tell their customers about it. So I help them kind of prepare their packaging so that they have a good story to tell, that they have the right story to tell from my perspective.
And we had a guest on a while ago that talked about, focusing on all the different things. And you and I both know how hard it is. You have all these things bombarding you from every different direction. In different products and services, how do you focus on the products and service? What do you do that our listeners can pick up on?
The first thing that I always try to do is understand where I can provide value, and so if I have customers come to me and ask for my help, and I don't think that there's anything I can do to really enhance their business. Then I don't focus on those projects. But where I see an opportunity, now I may have a customer comes to me who wants one thing, and I say, well, I can do that, but in the event you take a look at this a little bit differently, we may be able to create a lot more value. Then I will want to sell them on that. I want them, of course, I want my customers to be successful.
It really sounds like you become a real partner with your customers.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have some examples of opportunity scale?
Well, I talk about opportunity scale to some of the people that I counsel in, we all have limited resources, financial resources, time resources, knowledge, etc. I talk to people sometimes and they have ideas. Oh, they say, this is a great idea. This is a big idea. So I say, well, do you have the resources to actually bring that idea to fruition? And they say, well, no, but I just need an investor, or I just need a prototype. I had a fellow came to me and said, I know this will work, but the prototype costs $4 million. And I said, well, how much do you have? He says, well, I don't really have any money. The scale, the opportunity doesn't meet your resources. So, you've been around long enough, you probably remember Stuckey's restaurants.
Sure. In fact, I drove by an old one the other day, as a matter of fact.
Well, the founder of those restaurants started off selling peanuts or pecans at roadside in South Georgia. And he would, in the morning, he would go to the pecan company, and he'd get some pecans and agree to pay them at the end of the day. He'd go out to the roadside. He built a little lean-to there along the road, which was a north-south travel route before the interstate highway, and he would sell his pecans during the day, and then he'd go back in the end of the day and pay for the pecans. So this young fellow, who was about 10 years old, had almost zero resource in terms of a financial resource. He didn't have any money to build a building or advertise or even pay for the product. So he started where he was, and then, of course, built that little roadside stand into an empire that grew along with the interstate highways. It's a great read. I love to read about inventors and inventions and their struggles and successes, and the history of Stuckey's is one of those that I think is a great lesson to entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I think I've read that book. It really is. It's amazing. I find a lot of people that are starting their own business, they haven't really thought it all through and what exactly the resources they need are. And we had a guest on one day that was talking about, if you were going to plan a trip to California and you were starting in Michigan, you want to make sure that you have enough gas to not only get to California, but you can also get home. And if you don't, you're only going to get to, to maybe Kansas. And then what are you going to do?
Exactly. And as one of the things I talked to kind of budding entrepreneurs about as well is, when do they get to cash flow? And the projects I work on, I look at, okay, what's the investment that I need to do to development? But then what is my investment that I need to get to start generating some cash that's going to continue to fund the business, whatever it might be? And so, of course, I want to get to cash flow as soon as I can, so that I can keep feeding the development.
Sure. You mentioned, Henry, to have attention to detail, and that was really a key to success. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, when you start off, anybody starts off with an idea. It's generally in a raw form. And so you continue to work on it, and along the line you've come across what might be barriers or challenges. It's the little details. I was just reading about the development of a ballpoint pen. First patent, 1888, came on the market in the U.S. in 1945.
Wow.
The details were in the ball and the ink. The concept was there in 1888. But the details to get the ink to flow out in a uniform manner without leaking were the development over that period of over 60 years. So, so many products that I see that come to market and fail are missing just some little pieces that would make them work, and some entrepreneurs have the opportunity to come to market and then come back and come to market again. I was just reading about AngelList, which is a website to match up investors and entrepreneurs. And the creators of AngelList, this was their fourth attempt to put this kind of web portal together, and finally they said, well, finally we have it right. So the concept was there in the first attempt, but it's the details that make it work. And the products that I'm bringing to market now, I have 2 years of development time in, and hundreds of prototypes in the recycle bin as I work through those details.
I laugh at your comment about the prototypes because we developed a product that we're just now selling, and I don't know how many prototypes we had, and I kept them all, and I have them all lined up to remind me. And the first one we did, I remember, was $1,200, and this gal that worked for me dropped it.
Ooh.
And I could have died. It cracked right in half. And she just figured it was a piece of plastic, Henry.
Right.
Awful. Henry, what's the website? Do you remember for the Angel List? What do you remember?
Oh,
what the website is?
I think it's angellist.com.
Okay.
It's very interesting. Anybody who's thinking about raising capital to fund their efforts, I would recommend they go out and check it out.
Okay. You know, you're talking about the different prototypes and the different, you know, changes and so on. And I'm curious, how do you stay objective but still passionate about the products and your products that you're developing?
Well, Bill, I think that's a great question. As you know, inventors tend to fall in love with their inventions. And so they lose objectivity. And, you know, they go around and they ask their friends and family, those people close to them, what they think. And, of course, they tell them pretty much what they want to hear. And it's actually one of the biggest problems from my perspective, the years I've worked with inventors, that one of the biggest problems inventors have is not stepping back from their invention and trying to be objective. So
how do you do that?
Well, there are a variety of ways. Certainly getting feedback from people, as many people as you can. Now, inventors have oftentimes are concerned about confidentiality and so forth, but I've had inventors who talked to me and were very concerned and said, well, I can't really tell you what it is because, you know, it's a secret and I don't want it to get out. And I'd say, well, I can understand that, but the likelihood of anyone, including yourself, taking an idea and getting it to market is so small. For me, that's the least of your concerns. And in fact, I'll tell you what, I will show you my best 10 ideas. I'll let you take any one of them if you want to take it to market. So. Yeah. Confidentiality is very important at certain times, but at other times it's not. And again, that's one of those areas we need to be objective about. When is it important? At what time? Just the raw idea. Ideas are free, as we all know. So, but once you start getting into those details and start finding real solutions to the problems that always arise, the obstacles, then you're actually developing something, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Henry, have you ever had a product that you know, you were really sure was going to work, and you worked on it for a long time, and then you finally had to admit that it wasn't going to work or wasn't going to sell?
Yes and no. Have certainly had products that I've worked on a long time, and at some point I abandoned because I did not think they were going to be economically viable. Now, did I believe they wouldn't sell? No. You know, once I had the idea, I believed in it. But did I believe that I could get it into the marketplace and make it profitable? No. And there's such an important distinction part of being objective is to say, do I have the resources? Do I have the knowledge? Is the product, does it have enough value so that people are going to, I can set a price that people are going to be willing to pay, and in the end of the day, we have a profit. And even big companies struggle with this tremendously. That's why products get launched and huge investments are put into advertising and in development, infrastructure, manufacturing.
But at the end of the day, there are not enough buyers who are willing to pay the price to sustain the business. So and for me, that's different than will it sell?
Sure. So that's very, very true. Tell me about the VOSQ analysis you do.
That's something I've to address this area of objectivity. Because I get very passionate about my ideas, of course. I developed a system to help me stay objective, and I call it VOSQ, or V-O-S-Q. The V stands for vision. So whatever effort I might undertake, then I will start off by making a vision statement. What is it I want? What is my vision? If I'm going to make whatever product, a new coffee cup. I have a concept for a new coffee cup. Then my vision might be to solve some problem or help the world. Maybe it's a sustainable coffee cup, whatever. So I'll write the vision in the broadest way that I believe is this invention. And then the O is for objective. Generally, if I'm in the business of commercialization, my objective is to create a sustainable business around this vision, and I might put some details into the objective in terms of reaching a certain amount of sales or income or in a certain period of time. The S is for statements. And these are things that I believe to be true, things that I think I know. They can be broad or they can be very specific. And so the statements are, well, people who have tried this, will say this coffee mug, liked it. Or I believe there's a need for this mug because. And whatever I believe are the kind of the fundamental things that will make this successful, I write down in my statements. And then in the question section, I will list the things that I don't know that I need to know in order to meet my objective. Now, once I put this together, and it's a pretty intense exercise. And anybody out there listening, I challenge them to create a VOSQ on anything they're working on. You'll begin to experience a little bit about how objective you are about what you're working on. So once I've created my VOSQ, then on a periodic basis, where that might be every week or every month, I go back and I review all of those things on there. Now, in a month's time, certainly in a month's time, I will have some new statements if I've continued to work on the project. I'll have some new questions. And so it will continually evolve. And I may get to a point that I'll have to adjust my objective. I might even adjust the vision as a whole. I might discover something in the process of development that now I have a bigger vision than originally. So this is for me, it's a very useful tool to continue to stay objective.
That's really a great analysis and a good way to really help people organize their thoughts, I think, Henry. I have another question for you, Henry. When we first spoke before the show started, you had mentioned you'd been in the large corporate world for 30 years before you started your business. And I did the same thing. And it's it was terrifying when I got out of the corporate world to go into starting my own business. And, of course, I'm glad I didn't. I never looked back. But tell our listeners what went through your mind when you went from the corporate world to starting your business and how you got through all the pros and cons and the challenges.
That's a great question. And of course, I would be surprised if it's not terrifying to anybody. In fact, I know people who continue to say to me, "Oh, I just want to get rid of this job and do my own thing." But they're terrified, and you give up, of course, a lot. You give up simple things like health benefits and vacation holidays and so forth. You know, I have people say, "Well, oh, by the way, we'll be closed next Monday." And I think, "Well, closed next Monday? What are you talking about?" "Oh, it's a holiday." "Oh, well, with my own business, I don't recognize holidays. If my customers do, that's fine, but they don't show up on my radar." In any case, you talked about this trip to California. You start off and you need to make sure you have enough gas to get there and to get back. Well, of course, you're starting your own business. You want to be able to, ideally, have enough gas to make it through the development cycle, which generally takes a year to 18 months before you start getting some cash flow. I certainly think you need a plan. And when I started my own business, I had a plan, because I was going into a development/consulting arena. I, in fact, negotiated with the company that I was leaving to use my services. So I had a plan as to how I would be able to start without starting absolutely from scratch, where I knew I'd have some income coming in. That was very effective for me. That everybody has a different way to do it, and as to your point, they need a plan. And that's the comforting part. That way, it wasn't quite so terrifying.
Yeah. I know last night I met with a friend we grew up together, and he has his own business too, and we had dinner and a couple beers, and we went on our merry way, and we were both laughing about what we were doing today, Friday. And, he said he had a couple friends that were taking the day off. And I was like, "Yeah, that'd be kind of nice sometimes just to take a day off." Well, Henry, tell our listeners how if they have any questions about product development and packaging development or want to talk to you about your VOSC system, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way is simply call me at 770-401-6015. Or they can email me at hwishhusen@gmail.com. That's hwishhusen@gmail.com. I have a website that I just put up last week with my newest product, lignometza.com. That's lignometsa.com. And I have another website, moldedfiberpackaging.com, that tells people about that. So any of those ways, I'd be happy to talk to any of the listeners about getting started, about product or package development, and certainly about packaging.
Well, thanks for being on our show today, Henry. Our listeners have gotten some great nuggets and learnings that they can really use, I think, in their launch and their journey.
Well, great. Thanks for having me, Bill.
And I want to give a special thanks today to our sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle. So tune in next week at the same time to listen live or go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. This is Bill McHenry, and signing off for myself and Ron Reardon on another great session of The Launch Hour.